So today's a very auspicious day. The appearance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada. Thank you. I prepared, actually, I'm so over-prepared that I have two sets of notes. One is called the short version, and the other one is the long version, but I know that it's not going to be possible to do the long version. It's too long. It's 9 pages. So I'm going to do the short version and then see if there's any questions. Maybe we can get some contributions and questions. This is my a little bit of something on the slides themselves. It's difficult with some of these slides to pin it to a particular date. I checked, my brain's not working. Who's the three-volume Bhaktisiddhanta was written by? Bhaktivikash Swami. I checked all of his pictures and if they had any notation about when and where they took place. And he admits that most of them, some of them he could figure that out or find out, and some of them not. So when I know, I'll tell you, but otherwise you're sort of stuck with the image. What I'm going to do is leave each image up there for a little while I talk about some of the things it brings to mind, and then go to the next one. I've never done it before, so I'm winging it a little bit. So this first slide is a picture taken of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur when he was 7 years old. When he was born in Jagannath Puri. At that time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the district magistrate there in quite a powerful position of influence. And so when he was born, there were a lot of auspicious signs. One was that he was born with his umbilical cord wrapped around his neck like a Brahmin thread. Another one, there was an astrologer, quite a famous astrologer, on hand at the time, and he said that there were 32 auspicious symptoms, and he had all of them, his physical symptoms. I don't know if you can tell from there, but if you look at the eyes of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they're not the eyes of a child. By that time, when he was 7 years old, when this picture was taken, he had memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita and can explain all the verses as well. He was studying the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, attending classes by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he also was very much interested in the publishing activities of Bhaktivinoda, his father. And he was just an extraordinary child from the very beginning. He had we used to call it photographic memory when I was a kid, and now maybe they always had this word, but then later on it's called eidetic memory. It means that it's whatever you read once, you can remember. And the thing is, he used to practically devour libraries because he worked from 1895 to 2005 for the king of Tripura, which was a small state. And the king wanted his sons trained in Sanskrit and Bengali. And so he worked for this king, and he had there was the royal library. So he read everything in the royal library. And wherever he used to have some kind of engagement, like he went to the Sanskrit college for a while in Calcutta, and he would go to all the libraries and read everything. So later on, when he was engaged in debate, if someone mentioned something, he would say, oh yes, in such and such a book, on page such and such, it is stated, and then he would cite it. Therefore, people were afraid to engage in any kind of debates with him because they were going to lose. He never lost a single debate, as far as we know. And this was even as a young, very young person. Let's see if there's anything else. I mean, I know I'm still stuck on the first slide. When he was just about 6 months old, the Jagannath Festival was taking place. And the cart, according to the story, the cart got stuck in front of the house of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So they brought him out, and they took him up onto the Jagannath cart, and they put him at the feet of Jagannath. And a garland fell from Jagannath and encircled him. And then they did his first grain ceremony there on the cart with Jagannath Prasadam. So, quite an auspicious beginning. There's a famous story in his childhood. Prabhupada used to tell it. There were some mangoes gathered for, you know, to be offered to the deities. And he took one of them and ate it. And when Bhaktivinoda Thakur discovered that, he said, you should never have done this. This is very bad. He mildly rebuked him. Prabhupada used that expression. Mildly rebuked him for taking the mango that was meant for the deity. So he was just a child at the time, maybe about this age. And so he, from that time on, for the rest of his life, he would never take accept mango. He said, no, I'm an offender. So that was his... I've been thinking a lot about him, obviously, for the last few days, and it's quite extraordinary. This personality is almost like someone from another yuga. I mean, first of all, that he is a shutidhar, he remembered everything. And the austerities he performed, I mean, as I'll explain later, when he was a young man, he took this vow to chant a billion names of Krishna. So he chanted the vow of Haridas Thakur, which was 3 lakhs, which means about 192 rounds every day. What to speak of chanting 64 rounds? Most of us can't do that, and Prabhupada found that out soon enough. You know, he actually was suggesting it in the beginning, apparently, and the devotees just looked at him like, no way, you know. Then he said 32 rounds, and they still looked kind of startled. And then finally he said, all right, at least 16 then. So that was his standard for that during that period. Anyway, let's see if there's any more about the... Okay, let's go to the next slide. I know that it's a little hard to notice, but this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati as a very young man. And he has two associates here. Let me see if I can, because my memory is so poor. It says at the bottom, actually, Sri Gunja Bihari Vidyabhushana. This became later Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, the head of the Gaudiya Math after the disappearance of Bhakti Siddhanta. He's on the left side. And on the right, we have Sri Paramananda Vidyaratna, who was a very scholarly person. Now, this is around 1916, 1917, prior to his taking sannyas. And he had actually formed this society called Shira. Let's see if I've got it written here. Chira Kumar Sabha. He had gathered together a number of young followers. He already had disciples even before he took sannyas, and these were some of the ones who became his disciples. A couple of these guys, this assembly of the Chira Kumar Sabha, they took a vow of celibacy, and they were trying to encourage people to develop a lack of attraction to family life, I can put it that way, to remain in a renounced condition. So these personalities were some of his earliest followers. And they're very... The one on the right which is Sri Paramananda Vidyaratna. He was a very scholarly person, very learned. Let's see if there's any more to be said about them. I'm sorry, I've got all this stuff. Well, also, okay, go one more slide, advance one more. These are some more of them. These are some of his earliest followers. You can see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the upper left there. And these are some of the very first followers. I can't tell you all their names. But he was a very brilliant person. He was a great astronomer and a great astrologer. He translated the Surya Siddhanta, which was a very learned astronomical work. And he used to engage in debates fairly regularly. And wherever he ran into any pundits, he would debate them, and usually, they would walk away in a somewhat disgraced position. At one point, he had a debate with a famous astrologer, and it said that he was supposed to be the greatest, scholar of his day in astronomy and astrology, and he was defeated so badly in his discussion that he lost the ability to resist the calls of nature. That's a polite way to put it. He went to the Sanskrit College in Calcutta, and he left after about 3 years because he lost interest. He's such a brilliant person that even when he was in school as a child, as a young person, he was always reading the books of Narottam Das and Bhaktivinoda and various other spiritual personalities. But his studies, the other studies, he was supposed to be there to study. Whenever they would ask him any questions about any of it, he would immediately answer them correctly. So it means that just by glancing over them, he could remember everything. So you can imagine he probably got bored pretty easily if the topics were not interesting to him. So at one point, he was offered the chair in astronomy. And but he didn't really want it. This, by the way, this assembly of his friends, they formed this society, as I mentioned, the Chirakumara Sabha or August Assembly, and they used to meet in the Beaton Square in Calcutta, and they would discuss topics, related to religious thought. And the only one that observed all the vows, it says immaculately, was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Then he spent those 3 years in Calcutta and at the Sanskrit University, 1892 to 1895. And then he made this remark. He said, "If I remain studying with careful attention at the college, then extreme pressure will be brought upon me to enter family life. But if I am considered to be foolish and inefficient, then no one will put such an inducement upon me." In other words, he'd be pressured to get married. But if he was thought of as a foolish and inefficient sort of person, then they wouldn't put that pressure on him. So he said, "Then no one will put such an inducement upon me for becoming so engaged. By this consideration, I left the Sanskrit college, and in order to maintain my life for the service of Hari, I was desirous of getting an honest occupation which I could perform with the intention of earning a humble income." So what was that honest occupation? Well, we're about to find out. At one point also, he was offered, how in England, if someone is offered the chair in a specific department, that's quite an honor. Like the most important sort of person in that field. So they offered him the chair of astronomy, but he turned it down. He wasn't interested. Then he went for 10 years. He was busy just, you could say, accumulating knowledge and giving tutoring to the the sons of the king of Tripura, the Maharaj of Tripura. He tutored their sons in Sanskrit and Bengali and, you know, studied all the books in the royal library. And then in 1897, during that period, he took the vows of Chaturmas, which he observed very strictly. He would cook one preparation every day, and then he would eat his food from the ground, like a cow. They used to say, put your hands behind your back, and then you'd bend over and eat the food from the ground. And he used to sleep on the earth without bedding or pillow during that period. And then I wanted to read something because it gives you the flavor of his writing. There's a lot of things that would, but how much time do we have, by the way? I know there's no breakfast today, is there?
As you like.
As I like? Oh, no, that's a dangerous statement. I go on and on, you know, if I get the chance. But anyway, this is something he wrote about himself in relation to Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj, eventually, who would become his spiritual master. He says, I have been busy within this material world trying to bring sense gratification within the grasp of my hand. I guess you could go to the next slide. So this is him as a young scholar. Trying to bring sense gratification within the grasp of my hand. I have often thought that by obtaining the objects of sense gratification, all my shortcomings will be fulfilled. So he's portraying himself as an ordinary person, obviously. I often attained different facets that were indeed very rare, but my own personal shortcomings were never mitigated. In this material world, I have had the association of very high-class aristocratic persons. However, seeing their various deficiencies, I could not offer them praise. The most merciful Supreme Lord Sri Gaurasundar, seeing me in such a lamentable condition at such a time of adversity, gave permission to his two dearmost devotees, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gaurakishordas Babaji, to grant their blessings to me. So he always considered Bhaktivinoda Thakur to be his guru also, Shiksha guru at least. Bhaktivinoda actually initially gave him a deity of Korma to worship, which was discovered when they were excavating his place in Calcutta. So he worshipped that, and he also gave him the holy name to chant, and he also, he was very much his guide from the beginning. But then when Gaurakishore appeared on the scene, he pointed him in that direction. Because I was always intoxicated with the worldly false ego, wanting again and again self-appraisal, I deprived myself of my own real benefit. But because of the influence of my previous birth's activities in devotional service, I came into the association of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was the form of my spiritual well-wisher. My spiritual master, Srila Gaurakishordas Babaji, would go and visit Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and many times would reside with him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, out of his compassion for other living entities, pointed out my spiritual master. Upon seeing my spiritual master, the extent of my worldly false ego diminished. I knew that all the other living entities who have taken the human form of life were also fallen and low like myself. But by gradually observing the spiritual character of my master, I realized that only a Vaishnava could reside in the material world and be of exemplary character. So he was so attracted to Gaurakishore. When he saw him, it just completely changed his outlook. Gaurakishore, at the time when he arrived, he was singing, and he had a tiger skin cap and some bits of knotted rope and a tilak stamp with the initials of Hare Krishna on them, and he gave them all to Bhaktisiddhanta in their first meeting, and he had received them from his guru, Bhagavat Das Babaji, and who was the disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji. So that was their first meeting. So then he on Bhaktivinoda urging. He approached Gorka Shor for initiation. Maybe we can go to the next slide. This is just another shot of the young Bhaktisiddhanta. Okay. Anyway, so he approached him, and he asked him for initiation. And Gorka Shor replied like this: Mahaprabhu will be asked, if he gives permission, your desire will be fulfilled. So then he didn't hear anything from Gorka Shor. So then he asked him again, what was Mahaprabhu's order? Oh, I forgot to ask. He said, I forgot to ask. So then it was a third time. He asked him again. Gorka Shor replied, I asked, I did not receive the command of Mahaprabhu. So Gorka Shor was thinking this Bhaktisiddhanta was such a great scholar, and he was not exactly illiterate. He could read simple Bengali, but he was not a scholarly sort of person. So he was thinking, maybe I'm not the appropriate, very humble person, Gorka Shor. And so then Bhaktisiddhanta made this statement. He said, if there is no mercy, weeping and weeping, I can sustain my life no more. If I do not receive your mercy, I do not see any need in holding on to life. So he more or less indicated that if he didn't get Gorka Shor to give him initiation, he was going to give up his life. He didn't do that. Of course, Gorka Shor is a compassionate Vaishnava. So he initiated him with this name that we were reading earlier, which I have a hard time with, is Srivarsha Vanavidhayata Das. So after that, he spent some time in Puri with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his father. Okay, I guess we can go to the next slide. And one more. So this is just kind of a little bit after his time in Puri, but I'll explain. In Puri, there was a personality, a famous Babaji called Radha Ramana Charana Das Babaji. And he began teaching that this rhyming kirtan, Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam, you know, and so forth. And also he had his followers dress up, you know, as gopis and so forth. And they, Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktisiddhanta tried, but he had a big following. So when they criticized his behavior, there was such an uproar in Puri that finally Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a little bit more diplomatic, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not famous for being extremely diplomatic. He was very, very straightforward. Prabhupada characterized it as a chopping technique. And, you know, some people would be got offended by this. So Bhaktivinoda finally told him, you better go back to Mayapur and do your bhajan there. So he agreed. He went back to, he began in 1905. This was after he'd served out his tutoring period and devouring libraries. He went to Brajapatana at the Yoga Pit, where the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. And he began to perform his bhajan there, 3 lakhs a day. It's described that he had a hut to do his bhajan in, but sometimes the holes would develop. And when the rain would come in, rather than getting the hut repaired, he would just hold up an umbrella and go on with his chanting. During that time, he... he had some disciples, some followers. And it's interesting, he always addressed his disciples as Prabhu. He addressed them as Prabhu. Or he would address them sometimes as my friends, rescuers from danger. And he made this famous statement: if a Vaishnava does not do the work of a guru, then the spiritual Vaishnava lineage will stop. Again, if he does the work of a guru, then he becomes a non-Vaishnava. For if a guru thinks, I am a guru, then the first U letter in the word guru disappears. The word becomes garu or cow. A real guru does not make disciples and thus remains a guru. So in other words, you shouldn't think of other Vaishnavas as your disciples. Better to think of them as someone who could possibly help you in spiritual life. So that was quite a... Anyway, so he was performing these austerities. He did it for 9 years. So maybe we can go. This is the period in which he was doing this very strict vow of Chaturmasya and chanting 3 lakhs a day. He can look. He looks pretty skinny, doesn't he? So he, after these years had passed, these 9 years in which he had vowed to chant 1 billion names, which he completed, chanting Haridas Thakur's vow. He had a follower called Kunja Bihari, which we saw earlier on in one of the earlier slides, who later became Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, who was both a tremendous help in the beginning days and a tremendous, what's the opposite of help? Obstacle to the propagation of Krishna consciousness in the Gaudiya Math later. But here he is. He was instrumental in convincing Bhaktisiddhanta to preach and to go to Calcutta and spread Krishna consciousness. So he was a little dubious about it. And so he wasn't sure he wanted to do it. Prior to this, also before he took sannyas, there was a famous conference where there was a big debate about who was better, a Vaishnava or a Brahmin. And so there was a big hullabaloo, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur at the time was not well enough to attend. So he sent Bhaktisiddhanta, who was at that time still quite a young man. This is later, of course. And so he did so well at the debate. He spoke for, I think, altogether for 3 days and answered every single objection. And at the end of the conference, everybody began cheering and jumping up and down and carrying on. And so they were demanding that that he give them blessings and all that sort of, you know, the usual thing. And he went to another room to try to escape all the tumult because, you know, he was still a young person and he didn't want to. But there was so much pressure from the outside that he come out and give some sort of benediction to everybody. They forcibly, the people in the room where he was hiding, sat him down, dunked his feet in some water, and then they took the water outside and threw it all over everybody, and they were happy then. So anyway, these are some of the things that were going on right from the start. But anyway, he was thinking, that maybe he should do this preaching. And then he had a vision. He went to bed. He was thinking, I don't have followers. I don't have money. I don't have, you know, any assets. How am I going to spread Krishna consciousness? So he went to sleep in that mentality. And when he woke up, or not when he woke up, but he had some kind of experience. Some people describe it as a trance, some people describe it as a visionary experience in which the predecessor acharyas, Bhaktivinoda, Jagannath Das Babaji, and others, including the Panchatattva, all came to him and said, you can do it and you shall do it. So he took it upon himself to do it. And he began his preaching. So I'm going to go back to this other set of notes because I can't follow it. He was initiated, by the way, in 1900. And in 1914 and 1915, both of his gurus, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, disappeared in 1914. Gaurakishore Das Babaji disappeared in 1915. Radha Gokulananda ki jai. Gaurani kai ki jai. Lakshman Hanuman. Sita Ram. Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So then he met up. This Tirtha Maharaj convinced him to start. In 1918, he took sannyas at the age of 44. So he didn't. It wasn't as abrupt. Sometimes people have different impressions about when he did. He did it in 1940. Can you go ahead and turn? Go to the next slide. This is a picture of him when he took sannyas. This actually was taken a couple of days before. I can't remember. Okay. There's two pictures of his sannyas. One of them was taken just after sannyas. I think that's this one. And the next one, I think, was taken on the day of his sannyas. This is not a photograph, obviously. This is a painting of a photograph. Anyway, he took sannyas. He'd studied the teachings of Ramanuja, because their Sridandi sannyas was not very prominent in the Gaudiya Math. In fact, everybody pretty much took Babaji. And it was quite a controversy. But his attitude was, there's all these people in the guise of Babaji dress who are doing all kinds of nonsense. So if, you know, these persons are masquerading as being on the same level as Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, or persons like Gaurkishore, that's Babaji Maharaj, said, so I'll take a position just below that, because Babaji means, supposed to mean, that you're on the Paramahansa platform, that you're fully renounced, and you have no attachment to the material world whatsoever. So he knew that most of the people were just fakes. So he took sannyas to take a position below his gurus. And they established the first temple. Well, at Vrajapatana there was a temple. That was in Mayapur, in the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. But then they established this temple in Calcutta at Ultadunga Junction Road, which was the first temple of the Chaitanya Math. As we know, Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta 4 years later in 1922 on the roof of that temple. So he met him quite early on, but as we know, he didn't take initiation. What year was it? Did anybody remember? 11 years after. Okay, so 1933. So after 11 years, he took initiation. But he was thinking, I was always thinking how I met a saintly person, such a saintly person. And then he began his preaching, parikrams, doll exhibits, traveling in motor cars. Go to the next slide, if you will. So there we have Gaurkishore as Babaji Maharaj, very renounced soul. Okay, next. Okay, this is during the preaching period. This is the governor at that time. This person, John Anderson, was the governor of Bengal. And Bhaktisiddhanta hosted him at Mayapur. As you see, God bless the king. It was still very much the British Raj. And Bhaktisiddhanta, if you notice the way he's dressed, he's wearing a turban. He's got some, like, I don't know, like spats or something on. Very strange footwear. And he used to wear these, it's got this overcoat. Very interesting presentation. Anyway, so he met with many influential members of society. There was book publication, tremendous book publication. They published the entire Bhagavatam with commentaries. So many different books. I'm just summarizing things in a sort of crude way now because there's so much that happened. They built this new, brand new temple. There was a little bit of a temple at Mayapur during the time of Bhaktivinoda, but then with Bhaktisiddhanta, they built this temple, this beautiful temple of the Yoga Pit with 29, spires, pinnacle temple. He established in his lifetime, he established 64 mats all over India, and they had a couple going on in Europe briefly, one in London, and also he made some inroads in Germany through his disciples. In 1923, He attended the Rathiyatra in Puri and was dancing in ecstasy with his disciples. 1929, he had meetings with so many different scholars. Especially, there was one scholar that came from Ohio State University, Professor Suthers, who had an astounding debate with, not even a debate, just was presenting a bit of a debate. Some of the questions were quite challenging. But Bhaktisiddhanta answered so wonderfully that at the end, I'm paraphrasing, Suthers said something like, "I've heard many sublime truths. I would like to hear more about this to get a better understanding." So Bhaktisiddhanta's reply was, "Well, for that, you'll have to become a disciple." Well, he wasn't willing. But he spoke to many, many different kinds of scholars. And in 1932, there was a Vrajmandala Parikram. These were very popular, the Mayapur Parikrams, the Vrajmandala Parikrams. They would travel like an army with all these tents. It was like a practically executed with military organization. Tremendous pilgrimage. And there was an incident. The people who didn't like his idea that anyone could, you know, be second initiated as a Brahmin. It was very unpopular with the caste Goswamis especially. And so while that parikram was going on, they began throwing all these stones. They actually attacked the parikram. And some of his disciples, one of his disciples, I believe it was Keshava Maharaj, dressed up to look like Bhaktisiddhanta so Bhaktisiddhanta could make his escape. Because there was a very hostile crowd. Prabhupada also came to that Vrajmandala Parikram and he was listening very attentively to Bhaktisiddhanta, so much so that later on, at the time of his initiation, I have marked him. He likes to hear. So he was very impressed by his focus. 1932, this governor of the UP came from to Allahabad, Sri Malcolm Haley. Okay, we need to go to the next slide. Next. Yeah, just some of these pictures are just, you know, just, they're nice to look at, that's all. Okay, here's something that sannyasis didn't generally do. In fact, if you traveled in anything other than an ox cart, you were considered to be not very advanced. So here's his traveling by motor car. They were on their way to... where is it? I've got it down here. They're on their way to, if I can find it. Anyway, Naimisaranya. They were on their way to Naimisaranya when this picture was taken. Okay, next. So here he is with a collection of his many followers. You can see it's very nice the way they've made him the central figure. He was the central figure, obviously, but this picture sort of demonstrates that. Okay, next. Here he's meeting with some kind of a mix of different personalities. You've got some both Indian and European dignitaries. I believe this person on the right, I don't know if you can see, just to Bhaktisiddhanta's left. I think that's Malcolm Haley, the governor of UP at the time. That person, I believe. Okay, next slide. Okay, another piece of paper somewhere, I've got the names of every one of these persons. This is due to the researches of Bhakti Vikash Maharaj. But you can see some of the number 6 and number, I can't see the number, I think number 2. Number 2 and number 6 were the ones that were in that earlier slide, some of his earliest followers, Kunja Bihari. And what was the other one? I can't remember. I can't remember names. I'm useless at remembering names. Kunja Bihari and Bhakt Vidyaratna, something Paramananda Vidyaratna. Okay, next. Okay. In 1933, okay, go ahead and go to the next one. In 1930, this is the way he would sometimes present himself. Kind of interesting. In 1933, he sent his disciples to the West. And there were three prominent figures. One of them was Bhan Maharaj. One of them was Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj, who was actually Bhaktivinoda's disciple, but second in given sannyas by Bhaktisiddhanta, and Sambhidananda, another scholarly person. And they traveled and they met many famous people in England, famous. They met the Archbishop of Canterbury, they met King George, they met a lot of people, but they didn't establish much. They had a small center briefly, but it didn't last. I think it hung on for a while. There was a lady named Vinod Vani, I think, who was maintaining that center for some years, but nobody went there. So even though they spent something like 3 years, they preached in England, they preached in Germany, they preached in various places. And a couple of disciples, German disciples joined. But they weren't able to make that much of an impact. In 1934, the Maharaj of Tripura came to Mayapur and glorified the activities of Gaudiya Math. Of course, they had this long-standing relationship with the Maharajas of Tripura. Okay, go on. Keep going. All right, this is a famous shot. This is Bhaktisiddhanta lectured for 1 month on the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam in Dhaka. And he only stayed for a month. He said he could have gone much longer, just on the first verse. So that's what kind of scholar he was. Next. I like this picture. I remember we saw this picture in an old Bhakti Gaudiya when I first joined. And this Amiatma, this god brother of mine, I don't know where he is now, but I hope he's doing well. But just some things that we observed at the time. Look how many neck beads, for instance, he's wearing. Looks like about six strands or something. And look at the way he's kind of sikkha-tied. That really got Amiatma very excited, I remember, at the time. He thought, that's the way to have a sikkha. Look at that. And very austere, very noble features. Okay, next. Now, here he is, I believe, this is when John Anderson came to Mayapur. He was the governor of Bengal. And his picture is being taken with various dignitaries. Okay, next. Here he is with some of his leading sannyasi disciples. It's kind of a messed up photo, but at least you get some idea. Next. This one took place in Madras, I believe. He was greeted at a rail station, the central station. Okay, next. This is the Vyas Puja that took place in 1935. Vyas Puja celebration. You can see, if you look, there's fans. They weren't peacock fans, if you notice. They're some kind of, I don't know, bamboo or something. Interesting. Huh? Those fans, I mean, the ones on the upper. Lots of garlands, and there's all kinds of written offerings and flowers at his feet. Lots of garlands. So this is in some of his last years. Actually, Prabhupada, you know, in 1936, in the Harmonist, Prabhupada's famous poem was published, which I'm sure you all have seen. But there were four lines that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur especially liked. Does anybody know them by heart? Absolute is sentient. Thou hast proved impersonal calamity. Thou hast moved. So after Bhaktisiddhanta read that, he said, whatever he writes, publish it. Which is pretty nice. But later on, we met at Radhakund, and he told him, if you ever get money, print books. And he quoted the famous line that there will be fire, because they were already arguing over who was going to have what room in the Bagh Bazaar, the Gaudiya Math in Calcutta. It's a big marble institution. And he was complaining, when we lived at Ultadunga Junction, things were very simple and nice, and the preaching was going on. Now they're fighting over rooms. He said, there will be fire. So it was predicting the inner collapse of the Gaudiya Math mission. Okay, go on. If you can. Okay. All right, so these persons, it's E.B.J. Baker to Bhaktisiddhanta's right, from his right, okay? He was a district judge, and that's the other one's J.R. Blair. It was a magistrate. They're both from Dhaka, which now, of course, is in Bangladesh. No, he was in India at the time. But at that time, it was in India. And you see that strange-looking tube in front of Bhaktisiddhanta. It's like a tube. It looks like a sewing machine. Well, in the tube was some kind of honorarium, a kind of glorification by the dignitaries in Dhaka. Honoring Bhaktisiddhanta. I guess you're supposed to take the tube apart and read the read his glories. Probably wasn't too interested in that, but at least it was a sign of respect. Okay, next. Here he is with the Maharaj of Tripura, who visited him and honored him, glorified Bhaktisiddhanta publicly. That little guy, isn't he? I know that's not politically correct. A plump little man. But apparently very appreciative of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's preaching. Very appreciative of him. Next. This is, I believe, in Madras, 1932. Go on. Here he is, a famous picture. Prabhupada used to use it in his early Back to Godhead publications. It was he was busy editing the Gaudiya magazine, and this picture was taken somewhere in the Nadia district near Mayapur. You wouldn't want to irritate him, I think. They used to call him the Lion Guru. People were afraid to debate him. There's a great story that someone wanted to debate him, and he said, but you can't speak from the Puranas or Bhagavad Gita. And so Bhaktisiddhanta said, oh, okay, all right. And you can't use the Vedas except for the Upanishads. And he agreed to that also. And then they dropped the whole idea of the debate. Okay, next. This is in his later years. He wasn't very well in the last few years of his life. Go on. Next. This is during the period of Chaturmas. Next. This was in Mathura. This picture was taken in Mathura, where he was performing austerities. Okay. This is also from Mathura. So, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was only 62 when he passed away. Yet you see, of course, a beard always makes you look kind of sage-like and maybe older or something, but he really used up his body. You know, he was just constantly... so active during the 30s. I mean, sometimes it's the same as written of Prabhupada, that Prabhupada just wore himself out, practically not sleeping and performing so many austerities. Okay, the next. This is the last known picture of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I believe this was when he was in his last year. But you can see how much he aged. But still, so dignified, so focused. Okay, so I'm going to open it up now for any questions.